Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What's the history and traditions of making maple syrup in Iowa, and why does it matter? Let's go in depth with Josh Dolezal, professor of English at Central College. Josh, you've got a new essay out called Syruping. Where did the idea come from?
Well, I've been looking for things to write about since my memoir came out in 2014, and I did a lot of nature writing in that book, and so I was looking for things less exotic than wilderness, since that experience was not available once I started a family. And so gardening was one of those things that kept me close to nature and helped me cultivate a sense of place in Iowa. And I came to syruping late because I'd been gardening for several years, but a friend, Paul Weihe, the biologist at Central College, told me how easy it was to tap a maple tree and pointed out that I had one in my front yard, and I thought, why not give it a shot? So he came over one day, and he had the old metal buckets and a hand drill and one of those old metal spiles, which is the spout that comes out of the tap. And so he drilled a tap for me, put the spile in, put the bucket on, and, you know, as simple as that.
Well, and then what happens then? How do you process it from sap to make maple syrup?
Well, pretty much you just boil the sap until the sugar concentrates to a certain point. So if you get a candy thermometer, there's a certain range where you can tell that you've reduced it to what will be syrup. A lot of times it will look pretty watery still, and you might have actually boiled it down too far. And then once you refrigerate it, then you'll actually get sugar crystals if you boil it too far down. So that's pretty much it. You boil it. I use a propane burner and a turkey roaster pan, actually. You want something that's going to have a lot of surface area, but be open at the top. So you don't really want an old canning pot because that's got kind of steep sides, and so a lot of the moisture will just fall back in. You want something that's not terribly deep, but it's got a lot of surface area for evaporation. And you just watch it boil. If you've got a strong propane burner, then you can probably boil, you know, a few gallons of sap down to, I don't know, half a pint or a pint of reduced sap, or closer to syrup, in a couple hours. If you have a wood stove, it's going to take a little bit longer, because you have a little less heat.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about maple syruping with Josh Dolezal, professor of English at Central College. Now, this is just the basics that we've just been talking about. But what your essay explored was much, much deeper than just the crafting of maple syrup.
Yeah, well, one way to understand place is through time. And so you can understand it in the present based on what you can touch and feel, but you can also understand place through history. And so I wanted to understand this practice of syruping. You know, was it something native to Iowa, something that I could sort of situate within these other sort of prairie traditions that I've come to appreciate living here? Or was it a kind of import, you know, like strip malls or something that's not really unique to Iowa? And I found it was a kind of complicated mix of the two. There are native maple trees, but they tend to be in the Mississippi River corridor. There are sugar maples that grow in that river corridor. A lot of the Plains tribes in Iowa likely didn't practice sugaring, but the Meskwaki Nation migrated down from the upper Midwest, from the Lake Country through that river corridor and tapped those maple trees in the 18th century, I believe, is when they started migrating through. So there was kind of a complicated connection between Iowa and sugaring or syruping history. But I didn't really know what I would find once I started looking for that, and it just helped me understand my own practice better in that bigger context.
So I guess in general, your studies of place are also just sort of to put us in a setting and where we stand in the world and the history of it. Is that part of the purpose?
Yeah, I want to understand how much things have changed, or if things have stayed the same. Sometimes if something persists, that gives it greater meaning over time, if something endures. But also change, you know, is a way that we can understand what we've lost. In this case, one of the discoveries I made was that, you know, syruping was practiced almost immediately after European contact in the Northeast. It was a practice that European settlers picked up from Algonquin tribes and practiced actually very unsustainably initially, you know, whacking trees to the point where they would die within 4 years. And so the more sustainable tapping method was something that took at least a generation to take hold. But, you know, one of the conclusions I reached in the essay is that maple syrup really is, it goes back to the origins of what we think of as America, what it means to be an American. And so in that way, I thought it was a really grounding kind of practice, you know, to be doing this in Iowa and think of it as part of a national history as opposed to just Midwest history.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about maple syruping with Josh Dolezal, professor of English at Central College. And it ultimately becomes food for your family. Tell us about that part of it.
Well, I just have one tree, and it's a pretty good-sized tree. So on a good year, you know, if we have a sugaring window that goes for a couple weeks or 2.5 weeks, then we can finish off a couple of quarts of syrup from one tree. More often we get closer to a quart, or, you know, sometimes we'll get a couple of pints. I guess that's roughly the same as a quart, but it just varies because the sugar window is, you know, requires freezing overnight, not a terribly hard freeze, and then thawing during the day up to mid-40s, lower 50s. If it gets up in the 50s much, then it's probably going to shut the sap flow down. So it has to go back and forth. It has to freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw. And if it stays above freezing overnight for more than a night or two, that'll shut off the sap flow as well. So it's not a huge amount of syrup that we're getting. But if you get a quart or 2 quarts of finished syrup, you know, that will last us for sometimes a few months, depending on how many pancakes we eat and that kind of thing. But it becomes a nice story to tell as a family, and it's become part of, I started syruping when our oldest daughter was maybe 2 years old, and so she's kind of grown up with it. Every spring, that's just one of the things we do. And then the other two kids, you know, have just kind of fallen into that as well. And I hope that becomes a story that sticks with them when they're off to college or starting a family of their own, looking back on where they come from, those traditions. I did that when I started a family. I thought back on our Christmas traditions and other things when I was growing up. And I think that's a kind of gift that I can give to them.
Do the older kids, does your oldest daughter know how to do it herself?
She probably couldn't do it from start to finish, but, you know, she'll come out with me and I let her run the drill now. And, you know, both of my daughters, my middle daughter is 4 years old, so she can hang buckets on the spile, and so I let them participate as much as they're able. But when it comes to the boiling, I really don't want them anywhere near the propane burner, so that's my domain for now.
What else have you learned as part of this process?
Well, it's just one of the traditions that helps me, I guess, keep up with where I am and sort of how the place is changing. That's something I talk about in the essay. We're living in a time of flux, and with climate change, you know, it's harder for farmers to grow crops. Gardening is a way of tracking that kind of thing. What's the impact of torrential rain or unseasonably warm winters or just extremes on either end of the weather? And so I think of syruping as just one of those ways of keeping in touch with how things are changing. And as long as I can make syrup, I feel like the natural cycles are still working. You know, it's something that I can kind of predict, and things are happening when they're supposed to be happening, and I find that reassuring. And so if we start losing those cycles, the more of those fountains of energy is what Aldo Leopold calls those interdependent circuits in nature in his book, Sand County Almanac. And so the more in tune we are with that interdependence and disruptions of those relationships, I think the more we understand ourselves, the more equipped we are to change our behavior if we need to. But for me, it's just a simple way of keeping in touch with where I live and feeling connected to it.
Do you happen to have a couple of paragraphs that you'd like to read?
Yes, I'm going to read a little bit of my reflection on how I hope the tradition of syruping will affect my daughter, Lyndon, and I guess also my other two children, Tula and Selway, as they grow up with the same tradition. But when I wrote this essay, Lyndon was really the only one who was helping me, and so I had her in mind when I wrote this part. And I'm sitting with my family on a Saturday morning, and we're passing the syrup jar, and my daughter says earnestly, "Thank you, Maple Tree. The moment feels as real as any of our traditions. But I'm also struck by the lightness of it, how close it could be to a vacation souvenir, or a Disney character in one of her favorite shows, or a plastic toy that thrills until it doesn't. Yet that might be the best place for syruping to live, in her imagination, the borderland of story that merges the mythical with the real. I watch her lose herself in a sugary stack of pancakes, morning sunlight in her hair, and I know that she is moving between worlds the way I wish I still could. If the pint jar on the table can become the cover of a book to her instead of just sap from the tree, it has real potential to drop a lasting anchor in her memory. I imagine my daughter leaving home for a college dorm, decorating a cell of concrete blocks as if she belongs there, then clearing it in the spring and doing it all over again in the fall. How this ritual of settling and erasure will come to feel, after 4 years or more, as real as anything else in her sense memory. It is a ritual I've been trying to break over the past decade of making a home in a place where I had no roots. Restless settlers might have brought the maple tree to me, but the craft of syruping, like gardening or canoeing or cycling the back roads, has been one of my antidotes to placelessness, the kind of touchstone I hope my daughter might also recall later in life when she needs reminders of who she is. I feel within myself the urge of self-making and remaking that will become her own. How she will need to assemble a shape, a scene, an arc from her story-rich past. The choice will be hers then. Syruping could be just a bucket on a tree, talking about the weather, no big deal. Or it could be the miracle of a maple drawing its lifeblood from water and dirt, starting an alchemy that finishes over her fire and ultimately within her, sweetness on her tongue, sugar in her blood, the fuel of thought itself.
Thanks to Josh Dolezal for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.